with the Muslim world and coincides in the next few days with the anniversary of the October 17 massacre of Muslims in Paris that was carried out in 1961, while the War of Independence was raging in Algeria. When Muslims took to the streets of Paris in 1961 to protest the crimes of the French government, the response from the police was brutal. Hundreds were beaten to death and their bodies were thrown into the River Seine. The death toll, estimated to be around 500, continues to be censored by the successive regimes in Paris and ignored by the French media. Even today, Muslims in France, despite numbering over 6 million, are subjected to negative media scrutiny, with state institutions right up to the president's office being used to target Islam. French racism towards its Muslim citizens is likened to the mistreatment by the U.S. administrations of black American citizens. As analysts point out, while the Black Lives Matter campaign has resonated in France, Macron and his regime are blind to their own appalling treatment of Muslims. Black Americans have gone through slavery and segregation. French Muslims have faced colonization and slavery and now face overt institutional racism. In view of these facts, it is time for Muslim countries to adopt a unanimous stance against anti-Islamic policies of the French regime in order to pressure it to respect the rights of French Muslim citizens, as well as stop Macron from trying to interfere in the internal affairs of what were once its former colonies.
Midstream.
Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, in a highly important regional trip, arrived in Beirut last Wednesday in a visit that was at the center of political and media attention in the region, as some actors were concerned about closer Iranian-Lebanese relations. These American-framed concerns heightened after Iran provided Lebanon with fuel that drew optimism of the Lebanese population as it helped reduce the fuel shortage crisis amid an American-Arab pseudo-blockade on Beirut. Many analysts agree that the warm reception of the Iranian foreign minister demonstrated Tehran's regional maneuvering power and the unbreakable bonds of the members of the allied forces of the regional resistance in their cooperation to address challenges and conspiracies. The main message of this visit was sent to the Israeli entity as a destabilizing factor in the region, who is always alarmed to see Tehran increasingly establishing a presence on its borders. Tel Aviv was watching the outcomes of the visit with extreme care, as Abdollahian was received by the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, and announced the continuation of Iran's full support for their resistance against the Israeli occupation. The visit of the Iranian foreign minister to Lebanon follows two very important developments in our country, both of which are crucial in analyzing this visit. First, after 13 months of political crisis and uncertainty in Beirut and the failure to form a cabinet amid widespread political divisions, Prime Minister Najib Miqati managed to finally end the stalemate and form a new cabinet. The Iranian foreign minister is one of the first senior foreign officials to visit Lebanon after cabinet formation, indicating Iran's full support for the new cabinet's efforts to beat off the challenges as economic crisis has already begun to bite. On the other hand, Amir Abdullahian's visit took place after fuel shipments sent from Iran through the Lebanese resistance Hezbollah were able to reignite cars and power plants and fuel the normal flow of life in Lebanon after weeks of crisis. In addition to the largely reliving fuel shipments, the foreign minister flew to Beirut with good news. The readiness to build two power plants and also readiness to participate in reconstruction of Beirut port that was rocked by a suspicious blast, fully destroying the port in August 2020, and also to cooperate with Lebanon to establish metro or railway tunnels. The presence of the foreign minister in Beirut thus carries the message to the people of Lebanon and the region of Iran's support for stability and assistance to Beirut in resolving its political and economic challenges. The message is affirmed by the foreign minister talking to the Lebanese officials about the advances of the Iranian-Saudi dialogue mediated by Baghdad, given the destructive Saudi role in Lebanon in the past years to challenge Hezbollah's position in the country as part of a broader regional rivalry with the axis of resistance, from Iran to Palestine, Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Secretary General of Hezbollah, His Eminence Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, received the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Islamic Republic, Dr. Hussein Amir Abdullahian, and his accompanying delegation in the presence of the Ambassador of the Islamic Republic in Beirut, Mr. Muhammad Jalal Farouznia, where they reviewed the latest political conditions and the developments in Lebanon and the entire region. Iran's Minister of Foreign Affairs emphasized the constance of the Iranian position towards supporting Lebanon. Sayyid Nasrullah thanked the visiting delegation for the Islamic Republic of Iran's support for Lebanon, state, people, and resistance during all the past decades, proving that it is the sincere ally and loyal friend who does not fail its friends no matter how difficult these circumstances are, and that hopes are very high for Lebanon to emerge from this ordeal that befell it. Now, to discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Muhammad Abed, political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Muhammad. Now, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has hailed friendly and deep relations with Lebanon, saying that the Islamic Republic will continue to strongly support the Lebanese people, army, and resistance, and that Iran helped Lebanon through the years with resistance. Now, during the economic hardships, it has helped us out with medicine and with fuel as well. What more ways do you think that the Islamic Republic of Iran can actually support its allies furthermore in Lebanon when official voices, sadly, official voices of the new government are opposing any sort of help that comes from the Iranian way?
Well, first, thank you for having me. Let's take a look at the conflict itself, how it's shifting. And to take a better view on this, we noticed that the United States, one way or another, is just leaving the West Asia area and leaving even its allies. And the case that took place in Afghanistan is more likely to take place in Iraq and Syria and in other countries. And this makes worries, a lot of worries, in the ranks of its allies, including Israel and some Gulf countries. I'm saying this in order to show that the shift has turned from the military side and the war is taking other forms, including the economic and the social pressures, the media propaganda, the etc. And all these domains, the Americans are doing whatever they can in order to try to defeat their enemies and adversaries in the region. To take the positive side here, this means that the United States administration and the government and the forces of the military, military forces of its allies in the region are now very weak. They are no longer able to engage in wars. That's why they are resorting to these forms of economic and other pressures on their adversaries in the region, meaning the resistance axis. So here, when you look at it this way, you see that at earlier phases, the Islamic Republic has helped its allies, including the Islamic resistance in Lebanon and in other countries in the region, in military means. Now the support is taking place in other forms, in economic, in fuel assistance, etc., in domains like that.
Well, Mr. Muhammad, something very important happened during the visit while Mr. Abdullahian visited Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah. We heard Sayyid Hassan saying in a statement that Iran is a sincere friend and a loyal one, and that he has high hopes for Lebanon to emerge from this crisis that we are all living in. Would that optimism have anything to do with the ongoing dialogue between the Islamic Republic of Iran and Saudi Arabia, which is being moderated by Baghdad?
Once again, I will take a further zoom in order to view the issue. Right in front of me here, I have the Tehran Times issue in which they focused on the interview that was made on Saturday and was broadcast on Sunday by Mr. Abdullahian by Al-Manar TV. And they chose the headline that helping Lebanon, Abdullahian is saying that helping Lebanon is a moral duty. And this makes you see what the allies of the other parties in Lebanon are doing, meaning exerting maximum pressure, economic and fuel, medical issues, and all that you can think of in order to besiege the country that includes the Islamic resistance, although they fully know and fully realize that this will hurt the people and the people of their own allies, meaning the parties of the so-called March 14th. So this shows the difference between the two ways of dealing, a little ethical way, a moral way of dealing with issues. On the other hand, you see complete crimes are being perpetrated. You have in Lebanon some cancer patients who are not being able to get the medicine they need in order to have their treatment. And so to this extent, some hospitals have been facing the closure possibility due to the lack of diesel. And so at that time, the Islamic Republic offered its assistance in the fuel and issues regarding the assistance of these institutions.
Something else happened during that visit was a meeting between Foreign Minister Abdullahian and political factions, different political factions from Palestine who are found in Lebanon, from Osama Hamdan, the head of the international relations, and another from the Islamic Jihad, headed by Secretary General Ziad Nakhale, and representatives of the Palestinian Islamic and National Forces and factions. Given the ongoing tensions right now in the occupied territory, especially in Al-Quds and Jenin camp, in what ways do you think that the Islamic Republic can provide help to these factions?
First of all, we need to take into account that this visit is sort of a routine visit when it comes to any Iranian official that comes and visit Lebanon. So it's normal to have such a visit. I know that the Western media will be just trying to focus on differences with the government of President Raisi and the coming of the Foreign Minister Abdullahian. So they will try to look for any. But if you go back to all the visits made by the other Iranian officials, you always have this visit by Palestinian resistance groups officials to the Iranian embassy. Now, what the Islamic Republic has been offering at the time, sadly enough, that the Arab regimes are just turning the hand of normalization to the Israeli enemy and to the Israeli occupation. You have the Islamic Republic of Iran not only offering political support, but military support whenever they can, funding and raising money for and providing money to the needy people in Gaza and other Palestinian regions, in spite of all the pressures that are being exerted on the Islamic Republic of Iran, because they believe also this is a moral duty.
Mm-hmm.
This is a goal that every Muslim country should behave this way.
Well, one more minute before we end off with the interview. So I want to take the opportunity to ask you about the upcoming 2022 parliamentary elections in Lebanon. Just last month, we saw dozens of trucks coming into the Lebanese border via Syria from Iran, from the fuel shipments. But a lot of the opponents of Hezbollah made sure to make this a negative issue against Hezbollah. Do you think that this will affect the chances of the resistance anyway in the elections?
No, I think any Lebanese who is aware of the quagmire in which the Lebanese are living will even hate the these people who are criticizing. I mean, you are in a situation that you are facing death, as I mentioned earlier, in hospitals with lacking diesel and all the institutions. And so you have some people opposing the hand that is stretching to help you and assist mm-hmm. you in this regard. So on the contrary, I believe this will help the Islamic resistance parliamentary efforts.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed Abed, political commentator, for joining us to talk about the special visit of the Iranian foreign minister to Beirut. Thank you for being with us. Now, please stay tuned, because next we will be talking about the power outage in all of Lebanon.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Lebanon's two main power plants were forced to shut down after running out of fuel, state electricity companies said on Saturday, leaving the small country with no government-produced power. Lebanon is grappling with a crippling energy crisis made worse by its dependency on fuel imports. Erratic power supplies have put hospitals with essential services in crisis mode. The Lebanese increasingly depend on private operators that also struggle to secure supplies amid an unprecedented crash of the national currency. The shortage of diesel and fuel, along with an antiquated infrastructure, has worsened power cuts that have been a fixture for years. Blackouts that used to last for 3 to 6 hours could now leave entire areas with no more than 2 hours of state power a day. Lebanon hit by electricity outage as economic crisis deepens in this following report.
Lebanon's electricity grid has shut down entirely after the country's two main power stations ran out of fuel. The Az-Zahrani and the Deir Ammar power stations stopped working after supplies of diesel were apparently exhausted and energy production dropped to below 200 megawatts. This comes as Lebanon struggles with a fuel shortage that has forced many businesses to close and left people relying on the black market. People have queued for miles to fill up their vehicles, with the chaos sometimes resulting in violence. At the end of September, a man died after swallowing petrol he was siphoning out of his vehicle's tank, the country's national news agency reported. The UN estimates that 78% of the country's population is living in poverty, with soaring unemployment and a currency that has plummeted in value. In August, at least 20 people were killed and 79 were injured after a fuel tank exploded at a warehouse in northern Lebanon where fuel had been illegally stored. It is part of a wider crisis compounded by corruption and bad governance, which affects almost every part of life in Lebanon and has seen the Lebanese currency sink by 90% since 2019. To alleviate the crisis, Lebanon has received fuel shipment from Iran via Syria thanks to Hezbollah's efforts. It did not stop there. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian offered during his visit to Beirut last week the construction of two power plants within a period of only 18 months to help Lebanon overcome the unending electricity crisis, which has disrupted much of public life and is bringing the country to its knees. During a joint news conference with his Lebanese counterpart Abdullah Bouhabib, the Iranian minister declared the firms from his country were even ready to reconstruct Beirut port, which fell to almost a complete pile of ash following the August 2020 deadly explosion. These offers have been infuriating the U.S. assets in Lebanon, who run by the dictates of their American masters, at a time when Lebanon needs help in many sectors and is receiving several offers from countries like Iran, China, and Russia. However, the rogue regime in the country controlled by the Western-backed oligarchy have expressed their refusal to all these offers because it would simply break their control over the lives of the Lebanese public who suffer under the monopoly of cartels belonging to this 1%, which keeps sucking the life and energy out of the population. Moreover, Hezbollah declared that the Lebanese resistance movement reserves the right to explore all legitimate means to protect Lebanon and its nation, and to counter sanctions that the United States has imposed on the crisis-stricken Arab country, one of which is to stand against the oligarchy and benefit from the offers made by friends and allies to help elevate the crisis in the country.
Now with us to discuss this tragedy is Dr. Mikhail Awad, academic, author, and political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Mikhail. Now, the Lebanese electricity company has annual losses of up to $1.5 billion and has cost the state more than $40 billion over the past decades. You know, building and operating a nuclear power plant costs $5 billion. So we would have built by now literally 7 or 8 power plants. What happened there exactly that a cost was paid but nothing changed since the Civil War? We even have people say that during the Civil War there was better electricity for Lebanon.
Certainly, during the Civil War, it was better. And after the war, the power was secured 24-24, and all the studies had estimated that recovering the power to the 24-24 level would cost hundreds of millions, not billions of dollars. However, the political system that has been ruling and domineering, which nourishes and is nourished and gets support from monopolizing lobbies, specifically the oil lobby, has squandered the potentials and opportunities, spending astronomical figures without adopting practical methods that would have cost less money and time while providing power in short time, such as building plants or using wind or the sun as energy resources, which are bountiful in Lebanon, or encouraging areas, municipalities, and inhabitants to generate energy from green resources or build a nuclear plant that would have cost $1 or $2 billion, although many offers were rendered in this regard. Therefore, the issue in essence aims to create crisis situation, besides manufacturing hardships to make profit, along with controlling people's fates and nothing more.
Wow, well, the EDL, the Electricité de Liban, the institution responsible for the most of our government's debts, is dependent on credit from the country's central bank, which is now struggling with dwindling reserves. Now, the government has gradually raised prices of fuel and diesel as the central bank cut back on subsidizing dollars for imports, adding more to the hardships for the Lebanese people. Now, many observers are saying that this is a pre-planned scenario by the central bank in order to push for a privatization of the sector by allowing the public to accept it finally. What is your take on that?
Well, these measures that aim to deepen the crisis, besides creating congestions and suffocations to humiliate people and drive them to accept any solutions, including privatization and legitimizing it through wide doors in a conduct exercised by the system and former governments, has become in the past 2 years more like a policy. Definitely, the central bank, due to its inability to secure the needed hard currencies, having spent, along with the political system, all the revenues of the Lebanese state, besides the deposits of the Lebanese, and using the mandatory reserve, which is prohibited by the finance and loaning law, nor the constitution or the nature of the free economy system, so it was natural that this will bring the country to a phase in which electricity will no longer be subsidized under the pretext that the central bank is no longer able to provide the needs as the state evades its responsibility pertaining to this service, which is strategic and is essential as for developing or destroying the Lebanese economy. Here, the prices reached astronomical levels, as is the case with fuel and house gas, without amending or improving the minimum wage. A large percentage of the Lebanese people in public and private sectors live on their salaries, which are in Lebanese currency. This course may lead to more social tensions and disorders and may contribute to hasten the overall collapse.
Well, Dr. Awad, to help alleviate the crisis, Lebanon has received fuel shipment from Iran via Syria, thanks to the Lebanese resistance. Yet many of the Hezbollah's rivals in Lebanon condemned this move, saying it is both illegal and risky. They never do further explain how it is illegal and why it's risky, but they do. Do you agree with this notion?
I certainly reject it completely. Lebanon is supposed to be a sovereign state run by the government, the system, the ruling political class, and the supreme Lebanese national interest. As for those who claim sovereignty and reject Iranian offers and the bold step taken by Hezbollah to secure oil derivatives under the pretext that it harms sovereignty, they are in fact implementing the will and decision of the American ambassador. Iran is a neighbor in the region that has provided a lot to the Lebanese and their resistance, as the resistance liberated Lebanese, not Iranian land, and fought the enemy of Lebanon, which is an occupying enemy and not just an enemy of Iran. Groups that are hostile to Hezbollah and are completely linked to the will of the Americans and embassies and abroad can go silent or say whatever they want. But in terms of Lebanon's need, it is permissible and even obligatory to have such initiatives undertaken by Hezbollah. Most of the people are waiting for additional initiatives from Iran and Hezbollah to ease the crisis and humiliation.
Well, these offers that you are talking about, we heard a lot about from Iranian Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian, who held talks with various Lebanese officials during his visit last week as to cooperation in electricity, in oil, gas fields. He also emphasized that Iran is ready to support Lebanon to get rid of its shortages in the fields within the framework of all international law. Who has the jurisdiction to accept all these offers from Iran? And in case they were hurdled again by the U.S., as we have seen before, will Hezbollah take up that offer in its own communities?
Lebanon can no longer afford it. The American resistance to heading east was clear and evident, and America, through its influence in the state and the Lebanese system, prevented the acceptance of projects and donations that have been offered by Russia and China. It seems that it will reject the Iranian offer as well. But Hezbollah has the ability and power to meet the needs, for sure. This is what happened with the oil derivatives. It is noteworthy that Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah years ago had called for building a nuclear reactor to generate electricity and said that he and Iran were ready to contribute and help. This was apparently a preparation for our current day, when the Iranian foreign minister came and offered the Lebanese two electricity power plants with a capacity of 1,000 megawatts. This would fill the entire need for Lebanon if the plants were to run at their maximum capacity, and part of them would be on gas, as Syrian gas is close by. Hezbollah will resort to its means, perhaps by relying on the union of municipalities in one or two of its areas to provide space for the power plants.
Well, we have to see about that, Dr. Mikhail Awad. I'm sorry, but we are out of time. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Mikhail Awad, academic, author, and political commentator, for being with us to talk about this very crucial matter in Lebanon. Thank you for your time. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Mideast Stream.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
America's most familiar super rich simply do not appear in the Pandora Papers coverage. No sign of Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Bill Gates or any of other U.S. mega billionaires who top the just released annual Forbes 400 list of America's richest. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Sam Pizzigatti, journalist. This article is published under the heading, "The U.S. has become a tax haven for the vile and the vicious." Stay tuned for more. We've become accustomed over recent decades to see Americans front and center whenever a blockbuster new report spotlights the world's super rich. Last month, for instance, Bloomberg reporters tracked down the world's 25 richest families. 10 of the 25 happened to come from the U.S. No other nation had more than 4. Researchers from WealthX released new data last month as well. Their 8th annual billionaire census counted 3,204 personal fortunes of at least 10 digits worldwide. Leading the way, the United States of America with 927 such fortunes, more than Germany, Russia, the UK, Hong Kong, Switzerland, India, Saudi Arabia, France, and Italy combined. A bit earlier this year, the Swiss banking giant Credit Suisse published the 2022 edition of its annual global wealth report, tallying up 215,030 adults on the international scene with fortunes worth over $15 million. Americans made up 110,850, that is 55% of that total. And this past week has seen the release of still another blockbuster look at the world's super rich. This one, now known the world over by the simple shorthand of Pandora Papers, has come courtesy of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. The group worked with the news organizations from 117 nations to analyze over 11.9 million documents leaked out of 14 offshore financial firms. What those firms all have in common: they provide confidential administrative services for financial props who specialize in concealing the wealth of the world's deepest pockets. Out of the 2.94 terabytes of Pandora Papers data have already emerged the clearest profile yet of what's become known as the global wealth defense industry. That vast network of lawyers, accountants, and various other financial pros who devote their considerable expertise to shielding ground private fortunes from their national tax collectors, and in many cases, police and prosecutors as well. Pandora Papers investigators have named names in their stunning coverage. They have exposed the tax-dodging financial machinations of individual rich and famous from every corner of the known earth. But in this blockbuster report, unlike all other major recent deep dives into worldwide grand fortune, wealthy Americans do not at all dominate. The vast majority of the super rich the Pandora Papers have uncloaked come from outside the confines of the U.S. of A. America's most familiar super-rich simply do not appear in the Pandora Papers coverage. No sign of Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Bill Gates or any other U.S. mega-billionaires who top the just-released annual Forbes 400 list of America's richest. The over 130 billionaires worldwide who do appear in the Pandora Papers treasure trove include just a few scattered, fantastically rich Americans. Peter Vorisky and Augustin Armendariz in the Washington Post say only a handful of U.S. billionaires show up in records. How could that be when Americans so dominate the ranks of the global super rich? Are America's super wealthy simply behaving more nobly than their peers elsewhere and refusing to engage in shifty financial games to shield their fortunes? Let's get real here. The relative absence of U.S. billionaires in the Pandora Papers has nothing whatsoever to do with nobility. We're talking accessibility here. The U.S. super rich have plenty of financial agents, the tax attorneys, accountants, and wealth managers, as Institute for Policy Studies colleague Chuck Collins puts it, paid millions to help billionaires sequester trillions close to home. They don't need to partake of the services provided by wealth advisory firms in places like Samoa, Cyprus, and Singapore, or any of the other 11 offshore locales from where the Pandora Papers leak. One other dynamic also helps explain why so few U.S. billionaires have been showing up in the Pandora Papers coverage. America's super rich, as one Pandora Papers report notes, pays so little in taxes relative to their incomes that hiding money offshore can turn out to be mostly unnecessary. Contemporary U.S. tax code essentially expects precious little from super rich at tax time and furnishes convenient, perfectly legal workarounds to the taxes the law does stipulate. How effective have these workarounds become? This past June, analysts at ProPublica gleaned from a massive leak of IRS data that America's 25 richest pay taxes on $401 billion they gained from 2014 to 2018 at an incredibly tiny true tax rate of a mere 3.4%. But don't take the small U.S. billionaire footprint in the Pandora Papers expose as any indication of disinterest in tax havens on the part of Americans. Quite the contrary. The Pandora Papers make dramatically clear that the United States has now become a premier offshore tax haven for super rich the world over. To be more exact, a handful of low-population U.S. states, led by South Dakota, have essentially turned themselves into pimps for global plutocrats. They have enacted a series of state laws that let financial agents set up shop within their borders and then go on to service and shield grand foreign fortunes. The dynasty trusts these States Harbor are helping the super rich worldwide cloak their grand private fortunes in a gloriously lucrative anonymity. Pandora Papers abound in the stories of these global rich. A shady former vice president of Dominican Republic, for instance, had built up a huge fortune as the president of a giant Dominican sugar company notorious for violating the human rights of its workers. In 2019, this deepest of Dominican pockets shifted a major chunk of his ill-gotten wealth into a South Dakota dynasty trust. South Dakota note tax analysts Bob Lord and Kalina Tomave now safe harbors $500 billion in trust assets, up 36% since 2019. In the process, charges journalist Timothy Noah, the state has become a moral sewer.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
As the world recovers from the consequences of the coronavirus pandemic just before the arrival of the winter of 2021-2022, demand for fuel is surging, and so are the prices of oil and its products. The world is encountering an energy crunch as the supply of energy sources is failing to meet demand. Natural gas prices have risen several fold in Europe, while several factories in China have shut down recently due to power outages linked to the short supply of coal. In the UK, meanwhile, many fuel pumps are shut off and the country's military has been called in to overcome any violence. India's power plants are also running on critically low coal stocks. In the United States, people are dealing with natural gas prices that have gone up 47% since the beginning of August, and the energy crunch has caused oil prices to hit seven-year highs. These circumstances are causing central banks and investors to worry. Rising energy prices are adding to inflation, which already was a major issue with the global economy trying to recover from the continuing effects of COVID-19. Dynamics over the winter could make matters worse. In the meantime, two countries with some of the largest hydrocarbon reserves in the world, Iran and Venezuela, are under U.S. oil sanctions. For further analysis of this situation, stay with us on Iran Today. Why in recent weeks has demand increased for energy conduits, in turn increasing their prices? Mr. Joe Carr was appointed in charge of the International Energy Studies Institute last month. Let's hear his take on the matter.
In general, the price increase is due to the imbalance that has occurred in the market since September and October, when there has been a shortage of 1.1 million, 1.2 million and 900,000 barrels of supply in the market, respectively. This naturally leads to an increase in price. Now the point is, what is causing this supply shortage? If we look more closely at the market balance, on the one hand, the demand has been soaring as the COVID-19 pandemic is being restrained. On the other hand, increased demand for petroleum products due to a hike in gas prices and shortage of natural gas in the market has increased the demand for oil.
Since energy prices impact economic policies across the supply chain, the rise in prices has had a significant effect on economies, with many companies in Europe and Asia shutting down, unable to bear high energy costs. Analysts have attributed the rise in global energy prices to several factors. Some see the rise as driven primarily by the bounce back witnessed in consumer demand as economic activity returns to normal after the pandemic. Production, however, has failed to bounce back as quickly due to distributions to the supply chain caused by the pandemic. Other analysts see the rise in energy prices as an example of greenflation caused by increasing restrictions placed by governments on traditional energy sources. Mr. Hosseini is an economic activist in the petrochemical sector. He's always got plenty of input for us, so let's give him an ear.
The incident which has affected oil markets is a shortage of LNG gas, because the world could not have predicted that things would go back to normal this fast, and it appears that it didn't plan for the winter season. On the one hand, the demand has risen dramatically, and on the other hand, natural gas cannot be supplied as easily as oil. Also, Russia hasn't delivered surplus shipments to the European market in recent months. Now, if we want to calculate the oil price based on the gas prices, it must be somewhere near $180 per barrel. This has caused concerns.
Oil prices went over $80 a barrel this week for the first time in 3 years, with natural gas and coal also reaching multi-year peaks. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries is planning to meet shortly to decide whether to free up spare production capacity to help control prices. Mr. Sultani is an energy economic expert. His opinions come with conviction, and I invite you to hear that conviction.
OPEC and OPEC Plus are very cleverly and wisely managing the global oil market in proportion to their long-term interests and not necessarily to the detriment of consumers. However, they are concerned about the outlook for the oil market and, given this concern, are trying to manage and control the supply of oil to world markets. And this is all despite some irrational expectations and also pressure from the United States and some other industrialized countries.
Additionally, Iran and Venezuela, two founding members of OPEC, have inked an oil contract to counter the sanctions the United States has illegally imposed on both nations' oil exports. As the South American country seeks to boost its oil exports in the face of U.S. sanctions, it has agreed to a crucial contract to swap its heavy oil for Iranian condensate that it can use to improve the quality of its crude. The swap agreement is planned to last for 6 months in its first phase, but could be extended. To what extent does boycotting big oil producers, such as Iran and Venezuela, increase prices and decrease demand?
The Trump administration was in favor of sanctions because it wanted to find a market for its oil and gas under its energy dominance strategy. If that didn't happen, the U.S. increased supply would result in an imbalance and the prices would drop as a result. That scenario would prove damaging to the U.S. energy dominance. In case the prices went up, American consumers would be at a disadvantage. That's why Trump had reached a price range of between $45 to $65. The Biden administration published its national security strategy in March 2021, in which it explained the system it's going for is one favoring the transition towards renewable energies. This new system brings a new serious threat to the prices.
A Chinese logistics firm is going to play a key role in the supply of oil from Iran and Venezuela, even after it was blacklisted by Washington 2 years ago for handling Iranian crude under the sanctions regime. This highlights the limitations of Washington's system of restrictions, analysts say. According to Julia Friedlander, who is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Geoeconomic Center, these types of events show there are limits to what the U.S. sanctions can do, especially when you target multiple like-minded or selectively like-minded actors like oil traders. So you incentivize these alternative axes of resilience. China maintains normal, legitimate trade with Iran and Venezuela under the framework of international law that shall deserve respect and protection, China's foreign ministry said in reply to inquiries about the role of Chinese companies in the trading of sanctioned fuel, adding China strongly opposes unilateral sanctions and urges the United States to remove the long-arm jurisdiction on companies and individuals. U.S. officials typically do not move to intercept Iranian or Venezuelan oil shipments bought by Chinese or any international customers. But they do make it difficult for those involved in the trade by barring U.S. citizens and companies from dealing with them, making them outcasts for Western banks.
In the previous government, some expressed wonder at why India refuses to buy Iranian oil, complying with sanctions and orders by the U.S. But we have to ask this question, why should they buy Iranian oil? To answer this, we have to discuss our marketing strategy. The sanctions must become the problem of our customers and not us. We have made the sanctions our problem because of our strategic viewpoints and actions or inactions in the face of the sanctions. Indians were asking themselves why they needed to buy oil from Iran in 2018, considering the figures from the year before when they purchased 8.1 billion euros worth of Iranian oil but paid back 1.4 billion euros worth of products. Right now, they consider 1.4 billion euros of products in exchange for 8 billion euros of oil not a bad deal. But if that number was something like 6 billion euros, would they stop buying Iranian oil that easily? They would be pressed to ask the US for sanction waivers, as Iraq and Turkey did.
Energy supplies are likely to remain limited for a while, as it takes time for producers to boost their output in response to higher demands. The crunch is expected to get worse if a severe winter increases energy demand further. Much will also depend on how governments on either side of the Atlantic react to the current crisis. As it stands now, countries are already trying to outbid one another for supplies. It could get a lot more competitive when temperatures drop during the winter. The current energy crisis in Europe is an alarming sign of what's to come for the rest of the planet in the coming months. Predictions tell of a sharp rise in global demand for fuel this winter. Can Iran make use of this opportunity in spite of sanctions?
In fact, Iran is deprived of the benefits of the rise in oil prices. If there weren't any sanctions and Iran was able to sell its oil as easily as it could in the past, it would be a great opportunity for the Iranian economy to make up for its shortages caused by a halt in exporting oil and lower oil prices. But the sanctions continue to cast a shadow on the Iranian economy, preventing the country from taking advantage of the current uptick in oil prices.
Until a couple of months ago, it was not very important for the world that Iran is under sanctions because supply exceeded demand. But the current trends in the global market may put pressure on consumer countries, European countries, and countries like India and China, or U.S. allies to push the United States to lift sanctions. Of course, part of this depends on what OPEC countries decide, because they still have a capacity of several million barrels to increase production. If these countries agree under U.S. pressure to increase their output, the prices will certainly not remain this high. But if these countries are not ready or capable for any reason to increase their output, or if they are not willing to give in to the pressures, we can expect a price increase of up to $100 per barrel. At that time, these hikes could definitely affect the sanctions on Iran and Venezuela.
More on what can be done to alleviate the global energy crisis after a quick diversion into world media.
Hello and welcome to the news part of the show with me, Sarah Adema. As a fuel crisis is taking the world by storm, today we'll look into some reviews from different media outlets regarding this global issue. Our first review of the day comes from the New York Times that reads, A scary energy winter is coming. Don't blame the green politics. Several forces are coming together that could make Vladimir Putin, the king of Europe, enable Iran to thumb its nose at America and disrupt European power markets enough that the upcoming UN climate conference in Glasgow could suffer blackouts owing to too little clean energy. Blame COVID-19. First, the pandemic erupted and signaled to every major economy that we were headed for a deep recession. This sent prices of all kinds of commodities, including oil and gas, into downward spirals. But the economy snapped back thanks to government stimulus programs far faster than anticipated. And so too did demand for energy. But this industry does not ramp up quickly. So there was not enough natural gas, let alone renewables, to fill in the gap. Secondly, with major oil powers such as Iran and Venezuela under sanctions, it seems that the U.S. has played a major part in creating this crisis for itself and its allies. Moving on to another review from Almonitor writes, oil minister says Iran capable of resolving global fuel crisis. Iran's oil minister said, if sanctions targeting his country's lifeline crude are lifted, the Islamic Republic will have every capability to tackle the world's energy supply shortages. The Iranian oil minister Javad Oji declared, Iran is ready to resolve the ongoing fuel crisis in the world and make up for the shortages. To that end, he said the United States ought to lift onerous sanctions that have targeted the Islamic Republic's vital oil industry. OG made the comments following a virtual meeting of the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, or in other words, the OPEC. His statement referenced fuel shortages, which have hit the United Kingdom particularly hard in recent weeks amid soaring prices and long queues at petrol stations across the country. The Iranian minister advised Western decision makers to learn the lesson and help with the crisis by lifting unlawful and unjust sanctions on Iranian crude. Our final review of the day comes from the Interpreter that begins with the headline, Iran's Energy Diplomacy. Much is made of Iran's support for freedom fighting groups in West Asia, but far less is made of its use of power of the energy kind, exemplified in its use of its energy exports to take advantage of regional states' inability to cater for their own domestic requirements. In neighboring Iraq, for instance, Iranian gas and electricity powers more than a third of the country's energy needs, particularly in the south. So reliant was Iraq on Iranian energy that former U.S. President Donald Trump had to carve out an exemption from his policy of maximum pressure sanctions on Tehran lest the Iraqi grid collapsed. Tehran also exports electricity to Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Turkey, although in the case of Turkey, pressure from Washington and its own political desire to diversify its energy providers has seen a recent drop-off in energy imports from Iran. But it is in Lebanon where the role of energy in expanding Iran's soft power has once again been highlighted. Iran is always alert to opportunities, understanding the energy cards it holds, despite the economic constraints it operates under. Tehran has shown it is willing to play its hand in regional relations. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next edition of the program. And until then, stay safe and bye-bye.
In recent years, Iran has shown that even under oil sanctions, it has been able to export its oil through alternative methods, albeit less so. Recently, the first of several truck convoys carrying Iranian fuel was shipped to Lebanon via Syria. The fuel delivery has been characterized by the Lebanese group Hezbollah as a huge boost to the country, which is in desperate need of fuel. This was only the first of four Iranian fuel tankers scheduled to dock in Syria's Baniyas port shortly. Oil Export Monitor Tanker Tracker says the four-tanker shipment contains a total of 33,000 metric tons of gasoline and would need 792 trucks to deliver the entire shipment to Lebanon. China is also among the few nations that are importing crude oil from the Islamic Republic. Iran's oil exports have dipped under the harshest ever U.S. sanctions that were reimposed 3 years ago after former President Donald Trump abandoned Tehran's 2015 nuclear deal with leading world powers. Iran was the fifth largest crude oil producer in OPEC in 2020 and the third largest natural gas producer in the world in 2019. It holds some of the world's largest deposits of proved oil and natural gas reserves, ranking as the world's third largest.